Good morning, I'm David Ellis, and I welcome you to this edition of Down to Brass Tacks. It's the ninth day of July 2018, and I have a special guest with me today for the duration of today's program, which ends at 1 o'clock. The last time this person was with me in a studio was on May the 24th, and that was, you may recall, the day that we had general elections. She had been here with us during the course of the night, representing one of the political parties. It is no longer political season, and according to our rules, we are not restricted from having people who might have had been a candidate or have had a political bias over that period from joining us, not so much in the context of that political bias, but as a special guest to share perspectives on what's been happening in the country and where do they see us as a country and a region going. That person is Crystal Austin. Good morning, Crystal.
Good morning, David, and good morning, Barbados. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, give me an overview of what's been happening in Barbados since May 24th and the resounding victory of the ruling Barbados Labour Party now.
I would say that there is a stark contrast between the anxiety of that night. Certainly, we were here into the wee hours of the morning, so there was a lot of frustration in the air. We would have been on the tail end of almost 90 days waiting for an election to be held. So there was a lot of anxiety in the atmosphere in Barbados. But I would say that subsequent to the election result, and as I dubbed it that night, the red wash, I would say that the air has transformed almost drastically. Even after the austerity in the mini budget, I would say that Barbadians generally seem to be a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more relieved, and ready to see the country move forward.
So what would you attribute that, therefore?
I think that the past administration made a lot of fundamental mistakes as it pertains to the strategic approach they took. We saw several strategic plans being rolled out, medium-term plans, long-term plans, and they all seemed to point to failure. Going into the election, we saw them sticking to their guns as it related to the path that they had chosen, and not demonstrating any creativity or flexibility where that was concerned. So with the change of administration and the fresh eyes looking at our situation, the change in approach to the way how we are doing things, yes, we still have that mixture of austerity in the budget coming out of the mini budget, but certainly we saw complementing some of those new measures, some sweets, so to speak, some gains. So we had some pain and some gain in terms of the public servants getting that 5% and the removal of the road tax, which, albeit the fact has caused some controversy, has been of relief for some persons, especially those whose road tax would have been due in July, like myself. So we saw a balance of pain and gain in that last budget. So overall, I would say that the new administration has brought a bit of freshness and creativity to the way how they have been approaching our situation. They've demonstrated clearly that there are other options, and that is what Barbadians wanted to hear, and that's what they're seeing.
Any missteps along the way so far?
Definitely. No administration is perfect, and let me be very measured in the way how I criticize, because I know people are making assumptions about bias and whatnot, but certainly I think the appointments have raised some eyebrows, particularly in terms of transparency. Yes, we expect that.
Which appointments?
For example, the appointments in the Senate, wherein there was a constitutional change in order to ensure that two persons were able to take their seats. I think some persons saw that as a bit of overreaching because, let's be fair, Barbados has thousands of persons, not only those who would have been active in the last campaign, but within society that could have ably filled those positions.
Which positions? Because you've had the government filling its own positions. You've had the opposition leader naming people as well, and then you've had the Governor General in her right naming people. So which ones are you talking about?
Well, as I said, the ones where we had the constitutional change to enable those who had not been living in Barbados for the 12 months prior.
There's two people or so.
Yes, so those would be an example of appointments that would have caused persons to raise some eyebrows. Then the most recent one would have been the Director of Communications, Mr. Jung, who is not a Barbadian, and persons have been questioning the extent to which these positions have been made available in a fair and open and transparent manner.
But how much more transparent would you want these appointments to be? What are you calling for, therefore?
Well, I think that where there is a basic interview process, for example, with a government position, people probably would have been more comfortable if they had seen a vacancy advertised and people being able to apply.
Well, are these political appointments?
Indeed, they are. And that's why I said I'm treading very carefully in terms of highlighting these, what people are considering as missteps, because by and large, you would expect that the government would put in those senior positions people that will help the flow of their agenda to proceed, as opposed to putting people who may be perceived as neutral that could then turn out to be obstacles.
But that's, in all fairness, that's a judgment call that the person who is making the appointment has to make. They have to determine whether, in their judgment, the appointees are going to be obstacles or they're going to assist them.
Correct.
So that's where I find the dilemma arising, because you're conceding on the one hand that it's really a political appointment. It is the preserve of that person who is making the choice to determine who and what they want. But on the other, you are then saying, but it should also reflect the views of perhaps a majority, if not a sizable minority of the populace. So where do we draw the line here?
I don't think it's more so about the majority of the populace and their opinion as it is really about process. And we have seen during every election where political appointments have been made. Another one that has caused controversy are the two judges at the National Housing. People are saying, you know, these are two persons who were there before, and there would have been controversy shrouded around their tenure. I must admit I am not familiar with the full details, but certainly for both of them to be reappointed has caused persons to raise some eyebrows as well.
Okay. Well, let's go to the telephone lines. Welcome to today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. I'm David Ellis, and with me as a special guest today is Crystal Austin. Who's first on the line this morning? Hello. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Greetings and salutations to your great self. First, Mr. Ellis, welcome back, and I hope that you enjoy your much-deserved vacation.
Thank you very much.
Though, these call-in programs are really set out to be informative and educational. I was absolutely impressed by comments made by last Thursday's moderator, which also was followed by your good self the following day, Friday. He touched on several meaningful topics, one to which I had commented on another station pertaining to the legal robbery of some of our commercial banks without expatriating. We from the People's Parliament has a tendency to wait until the horse gets out of the stable, then to try to catch it. Sometime last year, former independent senator Dr. Francis Chandler had been quoted as saying, come the second quarter of 2018, there will be changes at a particular bank as they are going digital to get rid of counter tellers. I followed up by saying, some time ago, it was believed the credit unions were opening their own bank, which had the blessing of former central bank governor Dr. Courtney Blackmun. But very little has been heard of the plan. But I thought it wise to withdraw deposits from the commercial banks and put it into the credit unions, as the banks today is charging $5 for deposit and withdrawals. I went on to say, one should now invest in the purchasing of safe. I was profoundly shaken by the news that banks were charging for deposits and withdrawals. I even said that quite a number of the elderly are not computer literate, and if they are exposed to the ATM, their lives are at risk, since there is evidence of robberies and a killing at a particular bank ATM. I deem it as legal robbery that the banks invest your money without offering an interest on your savings, but at the same time charge you for doing deposits and withdrawals. Let me publicly thank Dr. Francis Tyler for first drawing it to the public's attention. On notice.
But you have done so much. You've done so much to just put in perspective the issue. And I'm sure there are so many people in Barbados who understand exactly the point that you have made. The big question that we must all confront is this. Since we are seeing a trend that is, in my judgment, becoming even more disadvantageous to the average person in the country, what is the solution? What are the possible answers to this particular problem? I listened over the weekend as the Prime Minister spoke at the end of the Heads of Government conference, and she spoke to a number of measures that need to be put in place with the whole objective of expanding the scope for Barbadians and others in the region to invest in other Caribbean countries, in light of the fact that people are basically paying the banks these days to keep their money. That's the way it was put. So we have to ask the question, what is it that can be done in these circumstances to stop depositors in particular from feeling as though they're being raped by commercial banks? Any thoughts on that?
Yes, Mr. Harris. I think I could come up as a layman with a solution. What should now happen in future? The Ministry of Finance and Economic Affairs should charge all commercial banks 30% on all of their profits.
30% on their profits?
On their profits, 30% on their profits.
And what do you see as the possible downside of that?
Well,
is there a downside to it?
I beg your pardon?
Is there a downside to that? When you make a move, you also have to look at the possible response to your move. What are the possible responses to that move?
Well, it's my feeling then that there would have to be some kind of dialogue between the powers that be and the banks, because at the same time we have to take into consideration that the money to which they receive do not remain in the country. It is remitted.
All right, let me get a comment here from Crystal as well. Your thoughts?
I think that any additional fees to the banks will translate into increasing charges to customers. So I, for one, am questioning the rationale behind this 30% fee that you're suggesting. What I would say, though, is that it is very concerning that persons are not able to earn any interest. I mean, 0.01% might as well be 0.00%. because of the fees, the $10 fees, and all these other charges that persons are incurring just to deposit checks and whatnot.
And the question is, how much worse can it get? Because, I mean, that door has long been opened, and what we are seeing is that the banks are stepping more and more into your face.
Yeah, the Central Bank of Barbados may need to intervene in this situation to try to bring some kind of balance. I believe it has some jurisdiction. It may not be able to give a full directive, but it may be able to influence. Persons certainly have the right, however, as I think Senator Holder said last week, to take their funds and put them elsewhere.
Yeah, but there's a limit to how far you can go with that. They don't issue checks, and you know, they don't issue credit cards. The credit unions, and you know, we've lost some leverage in the desire to, when we went in the direction of selling our interest in the, what was the Barbados National Bank. So it seems as though we are in a climate where we are held hostage. That's the way it is coming across. Mm-hmm. And while in this region there has been a lot of focus on the issue of, let's say, the banks, there's a term for it, where we have to have correspondent banks.
Yes.
Outside of the Caribbean working with us. And we were worried about the loss of correspondent banks in recent times. I haven't heard, interestingly, didn't hear that come up as a major issue at this last heads of government meeting. There has been no focus on this particular issue at all. And I think it also runs hand in hand with the whole concern about regional development, because commercial banks tell you quite clearly, development isn't really their thing. If you want a development bank, you're going to set up something else. But that's not their thing. They're commercial banks. So all of this, to my mind, is wrapped up in one issue, okay?
Yeah, well, the credit unions may need to find some creative ways to provide alternative products to the ones you mentioned that they currently don't provide, or lobby for the right to be able to do so. I do believe, however, that we're phasing out checks. I do believe that we're moving in a more digital direction. It would be interesting to see what types of opportunities the credit unions can provide persons in light of this new digital financial age.
Cryptocurrency from the credit unions, we're coming right back. Some reaction here to these comments about the way that the commercial banks are dealing with us. This person says, don't forget it was the central bank that removed the controls on bank savings to encourage the take-up of government paper. And this other person says that they asked the question, why blame the banks when the last administration gave the banks the latitude to set their own rates? In Canada and other countries, interest rates are instituted by the central and federal banks. This was a move by the last government to get Barbadians to buy government bonds. So if you're going to say that, then you're also putting before us the question of what should the current administration do? What should be their attitude to this particular problem, and how much latitude do they really have? This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Good morning.
Yes, welcome.
Yes, sir. I'm calling to deal with an issue on Wednesday, July the 4th. In the nation. But I would just like to say, I heard Ms. Austin mention about people going back at the NHC. But what you should do is put the matter in perspective. Two persons who retired from the NHC are now on the NHC board. And one of those persons had even gone on to work at the UDC. The other thing is, with the last administration, the deputy manager, a former deputy manager, was on the board for the 10 years. So if people from former or had former connections being placed on a board, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. Both parties are going to put people on boards that they figure that could advise the government more or less like experts, and that is what it is.
I think the bigger issue, though, is the future of the National Housing Corporation, especially in light of the fact that we have a difficult economic situation. If there is one state-owned enterprise that has been in trouble even before the last government came to office, it is the NHC.
Yep.
So that we have to ask this question. How relevant is the current NHC to modern Barbados? And is it absolutely necessary? Are we holding this particular enterprise or holding on to it largely because there's some jobs in there and we don't want to send home people? Or is it really relevant to our needs? No matter who you put there, and especially, let me put it this way, the people you put there have to preside over that decision.
Exactly. Remember that the last Minister of Housing, when they spoke about bringing UDC or rural and NHC as one entity, remember that the last Minister of Housing had said that housing should remain on its own. That's what he had said. But there was a committee who had looked at the situation with housing and so on, and they had suggested that they put these three entities in one. That's what. No, that is.
But that assumes that there is a need for all three. You know, are we sure? I mean, this is where the analysis is very important. Are we sure that we need all three, or that we could collapse at least one of them, or do away with one of them, instead of trying to hold on to all three? Why must we hold on to all of them, apart from the obvious reason, which is that you want to keep some people in jobs?
The functions are important.
What are the functions of the NHC today, vis-a-vis what they were supposed to be? In what way? When the NHC was established, it dealt with housing, rental units.
Housing. They dealt with lower-income housing.
And renting out units.
And quasi-welfare housing. That also was quasi-welfare housing.
Does it do that now? Does it have the capacity to do that now?
They don't do that now.
Why is it?
Agencies, yeah, NAB come on board, and NAB used to deal with that quasi-welfare housing.
So that eliminated the need to have the NAC doing that?
But the NAC went in an even broader direction. The NAC started dealing with middle-class housing. You look around and see the amount of middle-class housing that the NHC is responsible for. And, I mean, Mr. Addis, you should know that middle-class housing was developed when, remember when Dr. Richie Haynes was, they had a company set up.
Well, all I want to do is flag, all I want to do on the point is this, is to flag to you and others that there is that fundamental question on the table. And do not be surprised if it is one of the casualties coming out of the IMF mission to Barbados.
It wouldn't be one of them.
Because we have been discussing this for quite some time, or skirting around it for quite some time. But the amount of indebtedness of the National Housing Corporation makes it a prime target for that kind of decision.
But they're not going to get rid of the National Housing Corporation.
How do you know that?
I should know, Mr. Ellis. This begins to talking to...
Why you should know?
You don't feel that I would know.
You in the IMF?
Huh? But I ain't in the IMF. But the point is...
You in the government?
We've had discussions already with people from the IADB. And I happen to say...
All right. Having said that, tell me this. Why is it absolutely necessary, therefore, for us to keep it as it currently is?
It may need restructuring, but you have
to do what? Restructuring to do what?
You're dealing with housing at the lower and middle income.
But you say you just said
that with housing.
You just said that it is dealing with a lot of middle income housing. Indeed, most of us who have watched it.
Broaden.
Okay.
Yes, to broaden the situation, and which you know that there was a combined thing with the houses in West Terrace, Mr. Ellis.
All right, let me just ask you this.
In Lodge Terrace.
You have a
houses in Lodge Terrace.
You know, I am not asking you to get down in the gutter. You know, I just let
I
us
in the gutter.
Let us let the two of us let gutter, let the two, let because you, we have is. A we must establish this, huh? We do have a history of not necessarily having the best of relations. So please, I don't want to go there.
Yeah, but they're middle class.
I don't want to go there. Let me ask you this. If you say it is absolutely necessary because it is dealing with housing, do you accept that you have to tell us more than that to justify having it?
The problem is that it's not being properly managed.
Okay, and what does
because
that mean?
Something is not properly managed.
What does proper management mean? What does that mean?
Proper management, I can't go into certain details with you on the air, so you can keep.
You can deal with broadly. You can deal with these things broadly without necessarily getting into defamatory stuff or anything like that.
If you had read, remember that when Ms. Motley was the Prime Minister, when she was leading the opposition, and the PAC committee meetings, when she wanted to make something public, it was the former Stephen Lashley, former MP, who blocked it and said that the PAC is a committee of the Parliament and it must come through the Speaker of the House.
Okay.
Remember that the last time that Ms. Smartley tried to bring the PSC report, Mr. Donovan Ennis blocked it. So then it was placed online. So people read what was in it. I remember time Ms. Smartley telling the general manager, say, next time you come to a meeting, bring along all the documents. These are things that you will be aware of. But you can't, the IMF can't go and say, get rid of the National Housing Corporation. They can say, the other people from the IRDB work out a program so that the management should follow it. And not only that, Mr. Sinclair was aware of the IRDB people program. That is what he was aware of. It.
I don't want to prolong it any further, but this is what I was suggesting to you. If we say that we want to hold on to anything and that we should retain it, then we have to be able to argue the case for it, and we need to be able to identify. Yeah, we need to be able to identify the strengths and the weaknesses, and say, look, on the basis of these strengths, we need to correct the weaknesses and keep it. Because all I can say to you is, from where I sit, it looks to me as though the grounds for retaining the NHC as it currently is, they seem to be shaky. But Chantel, what are your thoughts?
Crystal, sorry. That's all right. Yeah, I really do believe that the National Housing Corporation has drifted from its mandate to provide affordable housing for Barbadians. I think the free market is already doing its job to provide middle-income persons with options, and the NHC should not be in that space. They should be providing persons who are young and certainly first-time homeowners with viable options as they would have done in the past, and we've seen that they've strayed from that. During the election, we also saw how they would have been politicized in terms of the allocation of these housing units as a treat to persons to get them to vote for the government, where they were saying if you had owned them and paid up your rent by over a certain period of time, you were able to...
But they didn't invent that.
I believe the BLP started it, and then they tweaked it. But certainly that in itself created a political football out of something that is so basic and vital to the people of Barbados. And we saw the way how persons, for example, in Haynesville would have had fires that damaged property and could have... The NHC really needs to be relooked, and I agree with you, David. During the upcoming IMF deliberations, I would not be surprised if the NHC is dealt not necessarily a fatal blow, but a certain blow as it pertains to their mandate and the way how they operate using state funds.
I must say to you, though, that the use of the NHC as a political football is something that has been there from its inception, some will argue. Has always been seen as a tool towards garnering votes one way or the other. So, but let's see what happens there. No, I don't think that was the principal reason you called us, though. You may be gone. Anyhow, my apologies. You know, I have this tendency sometimes when I hear something that's interesting, you pursue it, and it could at times derail a person from the main reason why they called me. So I apologize. I was hoping to give you some more time so that you could have pursued it, all right? I do apologize to you for that. Hello?